So the next is explaining about the benefit of reciting and studying, contemplating, and so forth of these sutras. Bhagavan said is the venerable Subhiti, what do you think about if some son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage completely feeling the billionfold world system with the seven time precious things were to be gifts, do you think any son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage would produce an immense heap of merit on that basis? Supiti replied, but one immense Sukata immense, that son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage would produce an immense heap of merit on that basis. Why is that? But one, because they are heap of merit. Because very heap of merit is not heap. Therefore, Tathagata says, heap of merit, heap of merit. So again, the heap of merits are empty of inherent existence because they are dependent arisings. You know, when you call about heap means many, you know, so coming many together, that become heaps, you know, so therefore, heap of merits is dependent arising on many other cause condition, that something that is depending on many cause condition, many other factors cannot be inherently existing or independently existing. And therefore, it's called heap of merit because it's empty of inherent heap of merit. If it is not empty of heap of merit, then you know there's no coming together or many things together and make it a heap. Before it's not heap, you know, you pile many things together, then it becomes heaps. Yeah, that's what heap means, heap of. So if something truly exists and there's no more, you know, piling many things together to make a heap. And so therefore, it is heap of merit because many merit pile up, come together, and then it becomes heap of merit. And that shows that heap of merit is not truly existing or inherently existing. And so it's not inherently existing because it's the piles or heap of merit. So that kind of reasoning you can apply to all of them, you know. That's how you use. And then, you know, the Bhagavan says, Supiti, compared to any son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage who completely feeling this billions world system with seven type of precious things were to be gifts, if someone had been taking even the little as one stanza or four line from this discourse of Dharma, such as Prajnaparamita Sutras, even just four line, you know, if they were to explain, you know, memorize, you know, write and then explain to others and correctly and truly teach to others. And then if you study, contemplate, meditate on that basis, the heap of merit produced would be much greater, incalculable, unfathomable. Why is that? So the merit that one creates from reciting, memorizing, you know, writing it down, you know, even is four line from that, teaching others, contemplating, meditating, the merit is much more higher than the merit that being offering of the seven precious gems with billions fold systems. Why is that superior? Because unsurprised, perfectly complete enlightenment of Tathagatas are a perfectly complete Buddha arise from that wisdom, realizing the emptiness. The Buddha Bhagavan also produced from it, you know, so as it is mentioned in the Sutras, all the Buddha three times manifest and actualize the Buddha would by relying on this, the wisdom realizing emptiness. And so same here, because all the Buddhas, all the enlightened beings are produced or are manifested or are achieved by relying on this Dharma, the wisdom realizing emptiness. And therefore, if you meditate on that, or if you explain that, if you try to study on that, if you try to even recite that, then you create much more merit than others. Why is that subhuti? Because the Buddha Dharma, called Buddha Dharma, are not Buddha Dharma, taught by the Tathagata as non-existence. You know, they are not taught as non-existence. You know, because they exist relatively, but also they are not taught as existent because they are not truly existence. Therefore, they are called Buddha Dharma, free of non-existent existence in the middle. Yeah, free of non-existent and existence. So it, again, it will come many times about this, the benefit of reciting even just four lines from the sutta, overpowering, you know, such as here, offering of this seven kind of precious gems, like billion-fold world system of enlightened beings, that, you know, it seems a little bit unimaginable, you know. But again, you know, the main benefit, to have the complete benefit, as is mentioned, is then, you know, to really have contemplated, meditated on the meaning of this sutta, the emptiness, you know. When you really contemplate, meditate on the meaning of the essence of this sutta, that is meditating on emptiness. When you meditate on that, contemplate on that, then that you accumulate the complete merit, as is mentioned here. And it is so because that wisdom realizing emptiness is that can cut all the delusions permanently, from the very root of it. So that is the most powerful antidote, most powerful virtues to destroy all the delusions, all the obscurations, from the very root of it completely. So that is why that is. Therefore, as Aryadeva mentions, if you have not to talk about, you know, cutting the root of samsara, if you have the realization of emptiness, but even if you have doubt about emptiness, it will shake the root of the samsara. You know, so far our ignorance is so comfortable, you know, unchallenged. From the beginningless time, become the boss who was never challenged, you know, we just follow that. never challenge. We just follow that. The ignorance, whatever ignorance guide us, we just follow it, believing that is the truth. And that is where we have been deceived. That is where we have been misled. That is where we have been cheated. And that's why we are still suffering samsara and continue to suffer because of that. Even when you started to have doubt, you are cautioning. Now you are cautioning that ignorance. And when you started the cautions with that doubt, ignorance becomes a little bit uncomfortable, shaky. You know, I don't want the name, but one of the leaders in the world, you cannot ask questions. You cannot disagree. Every time you disagree, anytime you ask questions, become very shaky. Very shaky, similar like that, you know. Very, then the ignorance become very shaky, become very restless, uncomfortable. And so the root of the samsara, which the ignorance, now become shaky. You know, starting to be really shaky. No more feeling confidence and comfortable as it used to be. So therefore, that being the case, the teachings that shows how to develop that wisdom, realizing emptiness, become also most powerful among all the teachings. The sutra that show how to develop that wisdom become most, you know, powerful among all the sutras. And therefore, when you study, when you memorize, when you recite, that become very powerful. We accumulate merit because of that. So even though just by reciting it, even though we might not get a complete benefit as is explained, but we will get a lot of benefit from that because of that. Okay. And next, not only next is explaining, not only you need to have a realization of emptiness in order to achieve fully awakened state, but you need to have wisdom realizing emptiness even to achieve individual liberation, such as arhat or such as individual arya beings. You know, so not only you need the wisdom realizing emptiness to achieve fully awakened state, but you need the wisdom realizing emptiness even to achieve stream junshuk, stream inter. So there are like 8 area beings path within the path of individual liberations, arhat. You know, so then it's describing about that. So really, what do you think about it? Does the stream inter thing? I've attained the result of stream inter. So all these are arya beings who have direct realization of emptiness. Okay. One stream inter, one more returning, no more returning, and arhat gradually. You know, all of them are arya beings. You know, stream inter is the least ones among them, you know, who have abandoned three Thomba Unjosum. Abandonment of the path of seeing, you know. The ignorance. The ignorance, jitta, you know, jitta, tartha, tava chokin. Tava chokin is holding something which is not pure moral as holding as a pure moral, you know. And then tartha is holding a wrong view as a kind of supreme view. So those are the ones that that need to be abandoned in this path. Subhidhi replied, Bhagavan, it is not so. Why is this, Bhagavan? Because one does not enter in anything whatever, so forever one is called steam enter. So if one has if one have feeling that I have entered with I have attained the steam enter, then they're still grasping to that. If they're still grasping to that, then you cannot have a realization of emptiness. And if you don't have a realization of emptiness directly, you cannot achieve that steam enter, and you cannot be the Arya being of steam enter. Are we clear here? Why that if you have a grasping that I have, with a grasping to the self and think, oh, I have attained this steam enter, what it shows you still have grasping. Okay? And if you have a grasping, then that means you have not had direct realization of emptiness. And if you have not had direct realization of emptiness, how can that person be a steam enterer? So that logic go to the all others. Once and then more detail. One has not entered in the form, nor entered in the sound, nor in the smell, nor in the taste, nor into the tactility, nor entered in the phenomenon. Therefore, one is called steam enter. But one, if the steam enter were to think I have attained the result of steam enter, that itself would be grasping of that of self, grasping of sentient being, grasping of living being, grasping of persons. And if there's a grasping, then it's clear that there is no that realizing emptiness. The Bhagavan says to be, what do you think of this? Does the one returner think I've attained the result of one's returner? Then one's returner is a little bit higher level of Arya beings than the steam injurers, you know, who have abandoned the up to six delusions of the desire ends, you know. Subhidhi replied, Bhagavan, it is not so. Why is that? Because phenomena of entry into the state of one's returner does not exist whatever. Therefore, one says, one's returner. The Bhagavan says, Subhidhi, what? And same thing, you know, if the one's returner think that I've attained with a grasping, I've attained the one once more returning state, then that means there's the grasping. If there's the grasping, then it cannot have direct realization and emptiness. If it doesn't have direct realization and emptiness, then it can't be one turn returning other beings, you know. And as I said, that other beings, you know, eliminate up to the first six delusion of desires. And it is called one's returner is because in order to achieve arhat, it has to come once more in the desire realms. It has to come one more time in the samsara, in the desire realm, before they can achieve the fully awakened state. The Bhagavan says, Subhidhi, what do you think about this? Does the non-returner think I've attained the result of non-return? Subhidhi replied, Bhagavan, is not so. Why is this? Because phenomena of entry into the state of non-returner does not exist whatsoever. Therefore, one says non-returner. Non-returner then is little high. It eliminate all the delusion of desire realms. All the delusion of desire realms, you know. But it hasn't destroyed all the delusion of all the form and formless realms, but it has eliminated all the delusion of desire realms. And it is called non-returner to attend, achieve arhat. It doesn't have to come again in the desire realm anymore. One can achieve within that to achieve without returning back. The Bhagavan says to Bhidhi, what do you think about this? Does the arhat think I have attained the result of arhatship? And Subhidi replied, Bhagavan, it is not so. Why is that? Because the phenomenon of arhat does not exist whatsoever. By, you know, there is no inherent existence of arhat, you know. So even Bhagavan, if the arhat the king, I have attained the result of arhat, that itself will be a grasping of that of self-grasping as a sentient being, grasping as a living being, and grasping as persons. So therefore, an arhat are those beings who have eliminated all the delusions, who have eliminated all the delusion, but who have not eliminated the gross, subtle obscurations. And that subtle obscurations, sometimes in Tibetan shetic, and sometimes it is translated as the obscuration of knowledge, sometimes it is translated as the subtle obscurations to enlightenment, you know. So the art has not abandoned that, therefore is not fully awakened, fully enlightened, but it has abandoned all the delusions. In Tibetan, Dachum, arhat, Dachum means destroying the enemy. And enemy here refers to the delusions. Someone who have destroyed the internal enemy of the delusions. Bhagavan, I was declared by Tathagata Arhat, perfectly complete Buddha, as the foremost of those who abide without afflictions. Bhagavan, I am an arhat, free of attachment. But Bhagavan, I do not think I am an arhat. Bhagavan, if I were to think I have attained arhatship, the Tathagata would not have made prediction about me saying the son of the lineage Subhuti is the foremost of those who abide without afflictions. Since not abiding in anything whatsoever, he abides without afflictions. So, you know, if it's something inherent existence, as Nagarjuna mentioned in Lamasongkhapa, if it's not emptiness, nothing is possible. Because it's emptiness, everything becomes possible. If it's not emptiness, Four Noble Truths will be not possible. If it's not emptiness, you know, then enlightenment is not possible. But because it's emptiness, therefore everything is possible. So it's similar like that. You know, if it is not empty, if Subhuti is inherent existence with a deluded mind, the Buddha will not predict him that he will become an arhat. That prediction will be wrong because it is not possible for him to become arhat in the future if it's something inherent in existence. Are we clear? We have delusion now, and if we being deluded or having delusion inherent in existence, no matter how much we practice, no matter what practice, we will not be able to be free of the delusions because that's inherent. But because it's not inherent, therefore, when we engage in a certain practice, we can overcome those delusions and thereby we can be free from delusions. And so that is what it is saying, you know, that Subhuti, the Buddha predicting that you will be arhat in the future. You know, otherwise, the Buddha will not predict that. you know. And because it's empty of inherent existence, because it's empty, and the Buddha predicted that, and then because it's possible. So that is more or less what it means. And that is where the Nagarjuna's that point. You know, some of the other schools argue to Nagarjuna's, if everything is empty of inherent existence, then, you know, then there's no Dharma, there's no sufferings, because they are understanding, if they misunderstood empty of inherent existence to mean non-existence. They couldn't differentiate the difference between inherent existence and non-existence. And because of that, then they think, oh, then you are saying there's no, you are saying then there is no suffering, there's no cause of suffering and all of that, you know. And if there's no suffering and cause of suffering, then there's no way, the path to overcome them. And if there's no path to overcome them, then there will be no cessation. The Four Noble Truths will be not possible. If the Four Noble Truths is not possible, then there wouldn't be Arya beings who have actualized that Four Noble Truth. If there's no Dharma, then there wouldn't be Arya beings who have actualized that Dharma. Then Dharma is not possible, Sangha is not possible. And if there's no Sangha, then the Sangha, the Arya beings having practiced more and more and eventually becoming Buddha, is not possible. Then three jewels are not possible. So that was the kind of the argument they made to Nagarjuna. And then Nagarjuna sweep, what you call, flip the argument back to them. It's the other way around, not this way. And he said, because of emptiness, all this become possible. Four Noble Truths is possible. And because of the is empty, therefore, due to the certain cause and condition, there's sufferings. Due to our own deluded mind, we create negative karma. Due to those negative karma and delusions, then there is sufferings. Or there's suffering, why? Because there's a karma, because of certain karma and other conditions. And therefore, because they are not inherent in existence, but depend on many other cause and factors, that's why there is suffering. And also that suffering can be, there is a path that can end suffering, because if we change our mind, perceptions, our attitude and thoughts, and by changing those, then you can develop certain mindset, certain mental state, and that can act as the path, antidote. And through that, then you can achieve the cessations, and therefore it is possible. But if it's not emptiness, then it's not possible. And so that he made that argument. And if we analyze it, it makes sense. And so it's similar here too. You know, if inherent existence, then there wouldn't be that predictions from the Buddha. You know, that prediction would not be accurate. The Bhagavan says to Bidhi, what do you think about this? Does the Dharma that I received by the Tathagata from the Tathagata Arhat perfectly complete Buddha Dipamkara exist whatsoever? You know, again, here in this sutta, Buddha mentioned about this particular Buddha that receiving teachings from Dipamkara, earlier Buddhas from whom Buddha Shakyamuni, when he was on the path, that he received the teachings. And then also in commentary, it said the reason why he mentioned here is to recollect the kindness, you know, the kindness of his teachers, Dipamkara in the past, to recollect, to remember the, to repay the kindness, to remember the kindness, and to show kind of respect and gratitude and respect, you know. And of course, the Buddha does that, and it is also a kind of advice to us also how to engage in our practice, you know, to be more aware of, you know, being more grateful, having gratitude, being respectful to our teachers from whom we receive those teachings, from whom we receive the kindness of that sort. That. Subhadev replied, Bhagavan, it is not so Dharma that has received by Tathagata from Tathagata are perfectly complete Buddha Divamara does not exist whatsoever. So also conventionally Buddha received those teachings and Dharma from the Buddha Divamkara, but there is no inherent existence Dharma that was received. You know, the Dharma that he received was, you know, convention only on conventional, only on the relative, you know. And next, you know, is once you achieve enlightenment, you know, then you also, while you are on the path, also in the Bodhisattva path, you train into create cause and condition for the Buddha field or Pure Land. When you become enlightenment, what kind of environment you want to have in order to help and benefit sentient beings. You know, that is as a Bodhisattva, that's why you have different Pure Lands according to different Buddhas, because when you are training in the Bodhisattva path, each one has made their own engage in prayer and other form of practice to create certain environment that where it is suitable for sentient beings to guide, to lead, and so that, you know, so that is what it is here talking about. Bhagavan Subhidi, if some Bodhisattva were to say, I shall actualize arranged field, like a Pure Land or the Buddha's field, training to, when I achieve enlightenment, I want to have that kind of environment to help and benefit sentient beings. If they were to say that, they would speak untruly, you know. Because if they were to say, you know, that they will actualize truly existing Buddha field or arranged field, then that would be untruly, because there is no inherently existing Buddha field. Why is that? Supiti, because arranged field, called arranged field, or the Buddha field, in some translation I saw Pure Land as well. Those arrangements are taught by the Tathagata as non-existence. Such Buddha field are taught by the Buddhas as non-truly existence. And therefore, if they think that I'm going to create truly existence or inherently existing Buddha field, then that is wrong and untruly. Therefore, they are called arranged field. Supiti, therefore, Bodhisattva, Mahasattva should train, thus should generate the mind without abiding, should generate the mind not abiding in anything, and they, you know, without abiding with the truly existence, believing the truly existence, should generate the mind not abiding, meaning, you know, that they do not exist at all, you know. Instead, one should train in that they do not exist truly or inherently, but at the same time they do exist, and therefore you know, there's no truly existing Buddha field to be actualized, but there's a relative Buddha field to be actualized, and should train in such a way. They should generate mind not abiding in the form, should generate mind not abiding in sound, smell, taste, tactics, and phenomena. And next one is of explaining about the emptiness of. So he, up to here, Buddha explained, you know, emptiness of the self, emptiness of the sentient beings, emptiness of the path itself, the emptiness of the result itself, and the emptiness of the Dharma, itself, you know, emptiness of the Buddha fields, all of that, and now is explaining about the emptiness of physical matter, you know, physical matter starting from the gross to more subtle. So basically saying all the physical matters from the most bigger, such as Mount Sumeru, up to the most smallest particle, they all are empty of inherent existence. So basically that is what that. Supriti is like that. If, for example, the body of being were to become thus, were to become like this, as big as Sumeru, the king of mountains, Supriti, what do you think about it? Would the body be big? And Supriti replied, Bhagavan, the body would be big. Sukada, the body would be big. Why is that? Because it's taught by the Tathagata as not being things, therefore it's called body. Since it's taught by Tathagata as not being thing, therefore it's called body. So since they are not truly existence, therefore when many atoms come together, then it becomes bigger and bigger, and then it becomes a body. You know? Our body, so-called our body, it doesn't become this body instantly, you know, it develops over the time due to many cause conditions. Food, nutrition, four elements, and many other things coming up due to coming together of many things, then this body was developed from very small to this size now. That is why it's called this body, and therefore, since it is made out of many cause and conditions, therefore is empty of inherent existence. If something is inherent existence, then it doesn't depend on other cause and conditions, other factors, other conditions, and it will always be that, and it will always remain that way. But the body keep on, you know, getting bigger and bigger since childhood, you know. And that changes come because of many causes and conditions. And so it is a sign, it is a clear indication that it's not inherent existence. It's a clear indication that it's a dependent arisings. Otherwise, our body will be the same as the sperm and eggs, you know, it will always demand that it will not have become what our body is now. At the very beginning, when there's sperm and eggs coming together, it will always remain the same no matter what happens. It is something inherent existence. But since it's not inherent existence, therefore coming together so many other causes and conditions, that sperm and eggs have developed into this body. So therefore it's empty of inherent existence. You know, that is why we are able to call the body now. Otherwise, we will be saying sperm and eggs. You know, otherwise, we will be saying this is sperm and eggs, not a body. But now we are able to call it a body because of many cause and condition coming together, that sperm has transformed into something else in this body. And we are able to call it a body and function as a body. And so that is, yeah. So basically it is, you know, all the physical matters from the biggest, such as biggest mountains, to the more physical, more subtle physical matters, they all are dependent arising, you know. There's nothing, no matter how subtle, how small the physical matter, There's nothing that could exist independently by itself. And even in a science, that is their finding too. You know, there's no one physical particle that could sustain by itself, exist by itself without depending on other particles. So no matter how smallest, subtle, tiniest matter it is, physical matter, it is still dependent on arisings, dependent on other particles, other matters, cannot exist independently, inherently. And from that, then all the other growth, physical matters to the biggest, our galaxy, you know, up to all of that, they all are dependent on arisings. Since they all are dependent on arising, they all are empty of inherent existence. There's nothing that exists inherently or independently. So yeah, so that is okay. Up to here, that's what it explains. So I think it will take 1 week. So maybe we will have to stay for 1 week. But I think once we know how to apply or interpret something, then it's more or less similar, you know. Okay.